Friars, the only Friar Tuck, is that the one? There's one that's
Friar
been fighting
Tuck
back.
From Robin Hood.
All other friars get slaughtered.
Welcome to DL Gaming. I'm Bobby.
I'm Nick.
And I just wrapped up the movie on the DL podcast. An old movie or a show, but that we revamped recently. We don't want to tell the kids about it, Bobby?
I guess we should say something about it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm saying something about it. So the movies on the DL was Patreon-only content that we were making, and we're actually bringing it out into the public to be enjoyed by everybody, and it's going to be its own podcast, whole separate RSS feed, its own thing. And it's just going to be me and Emilio talking about movies and TV or whatever we've been watching. It's also going to tie into what we're doing on the Discord server, where we've been having movie nights on Saturdays. And we're going to be talking about the movies that they watch there. And hopefully watching those movies along with our community. They're getting pretty popular, too.
Yeah. They watched Fury Road last night, Mad Max Fury Road. I think like 14, 15 people showed up. So They did it with the webcams on, too, which is it's good to see everybody. You know, you start to forget faces after a while. Mm-hmm. And Rubber Nuts now lives in a city. So we got him at like 5K internet. I mean, he was blocky, but we got to see him.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, yeah, it was cool.
It's in the city.
He's nice. Going to be around a lot more now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's good to hear.
All right. So, yeah, look forward to that. And that's going to be coming out early March. Also, we're going to be resetting our Patreon. So, if you've been a Patreon for a while, you know, we give out shirts and stickers every year. Those are coming up. Check out dlgaming.net. You can get to our Patreon from there if you want to be a part of that. And also, we're thinking about some new rewards and some new goals as well.
Yeah. Roughly, the big ones are the $5 one. You get your name on the Discord green, and you get to hang out in the Patreon chat-only channel where some real serious shit goes down, guys. You really want to be a part of that. Well, we usually run ideas by the patrons because they are patrons, you know? Mm-hmm. That's a big one. That's the $5 one. And then the other one is a $10 one where you get, after 3 months, you get a t-shirt. I believe that's how that works.
Yep.
Once a year.
And if you guys have any ideas that you guys want to implement as far as like Patreon awards or anything, just let us know in the Discord.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Cool, cool. All right, it's time for On the Radar. These are the games that have come to our attention that we would like to play but have not played yet. And the first one I wanted to talk about... yep, bing.
What's going on?
Those are our sonar pings, our radio noises. noises. The first one is called 6 Days in Fallujah. Ooh, that sounds like a great time. This is actually... it was brought up in a listener question by a listener of ours, Warconius, and he had some opinions to share on this. And I want to just bring it up here, and we'll read his listener question or opinion there. But I wasn't aware of the controversy surrounding this game. So here's the story. There's a game called 6 Days in Fallujah. It was going to come out a long time ago, 2009-ish, and it got a lot of pushback. A lot of people were upset about the content of the game, so they basically just shelved the entire project. The game is reliving 6 days in Fallujah, like the title, where supposedly it's the most bloody battle of the war in Afghanistan. It's supposed to be using footage and clips of actual soldiers, and it's going to be more of like a documentary slash game. So it seems like the purpose of the game isn't just to entertain, but also inform people as well. It seems like a very interesting idea. I think a lot of the complaints that people had when it came out or when it was announced, it got criticism from both sides, from soldiers as well as like other people. You know, some people were accusing it of being like propaganda, and you know, soldiers were accusing it of you know, trying to profit off of like, you know, human misery or experience like this really terrible event in the war.
A lot of U.S. I think the biggest casualties and. During that whole war was during that on the American side, more Americans died that day than I think the entire
war. a little bit of history about that day was, so the 6 days in Fallujah, I did some research on the game just, you know, as a military member. Day one of the siege on Fallujah, or day one of the fighting, was like not much happened, or not much actually occurred. But what is known as the second day of fighting, it was 15,000 American troops, or coalition troops, versus 4,500 trenched insurgents. And the thing is, like, in conventional warfare, like, you think in World War II, you think about people fighting in trenches or fighting in a forest and things like that. But in Fallujah, everybody was in a house. So imagine all day kicking down doors, and people are literally just sitting in corners waiting for you to go through to shoot you. And so it's known as one of the worst ways to fight. It's one of the reasons why the United States and most countries don't really try not to fight urban warfare anymore. And so that is what the game is supposedly about and supposedly focusing on, is just like the horrors of having to go through 6 days of constant battle and fear in the city of Fallujah, kicking down doors. And from my understanding, most of the controversy has to do with the politics behind the Iraq war, which we're not going to really get into on the podcast. But I think when it comes to war games and things in historical based war games, do you get mad at civil war games because one side, you know, was the South and one side was the North? No, it's really just telling a story, isn't it?
It's something that happened. Right.
Yeah.
And it's just another
way. It's not like you're glorifying it.
Well, yeah, but I don't know if it's fair to compare to the Civil War, which happened, you know, back in 1861 to 1865. Uh-huh. I mean, this is a little more fresh in our memory. So I would think people would have a little more.
All those guys are still alive.
Yeah.
So that.
Yeah. They did do another crazy. Well, I shouldn't say crazy. It's not like crazy technological wise. But one thing that they really did do was apparently each mission is a very descriptive and very vibrant memory of someone who served. And so they interviewed a bunch of service members that were in the siege of Fallujah, and they face scanned all their faces. They face scanned the photos of them during that time, and they put them in the game. So you actually play as those soldiers.
Interesting. Well, if it's their personal stories, why are other people butting in? I don't know. I need to know more about it. Maybe it's glorified. Maybe it's like, you know, making the Americans look super cool or making the Afghans look terrible. Who knows? It all depends on like how it's. If you're going to go with a documentary style game, you got to have, and with most documentaries, you need to just show the data, show the footage, and let the person decide. Don't try to put in your own agenda.
By the way, it's not Afghan, it's Iraq.
Oh, Iraq.
In Iraq. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just kind of seems weird because they want this to be, it seems like they want this to be serious, like taken seriously, and they're trying to take all the steps to make sure that they're treating delicate subject matter with the respect that it deserves. But then you put it in a video game and, you know, some 15-year-old kid is just going to go around like shooting the civilians or, you know, doing whatever. You know, it's like a video game doesn't seem like the right context for something like this. So it kind of cracks me up when they want to handle something very serious and then put it in a video game. Like, I don't know. And I've played video games that do things like this. Black Friday. Well. But Black Friday isn't much of a game. It's mostly a walking simulator.
Yeah.
And that's talking about the revolution in 1979 in Tehran. But let's read Warconius's input here, because he's the one that brought it up, so he deserves some credit. Okay, so he says, first, it's BS that people are trying to cancel before it's even finished. Second, I love the Brother in Arms series because it mixed documentary presentation with a World War II FPS. From the sounds of it, this is exactly what they are trying to do. Why not give them a chance? Lastly, let people make games, TV, movies, books that honor the men and women that fought for their country, our cause. If any wrongdoing was done by some, speak directly about it.
I can't disagree with any of that.
Yeah, I mean, you really got to hold judgment until the product is finished.
Yeah.
My opinion on this is, like, looking at, like, for example, Generation Kill. Have any of you guys ever seen that show or miniseries?
No.
So it's, have you guys ever heard of Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Like, okay. So Generation Kill was kind of like the first of that style of series. And Generation Kill follows the invasion of Iraq in 2003. And it's a very coin flip kind of show where it shows like the personalities of all the people in the war, like all the Marines that fought there. But it also shows that like a lot of shit was just forced to happen. Like you can't say, and as bad as it sounds, you can't say no. Like you, if you do, you're going to jail. You're going to jail for a long ass time if you don't want to obey an order to go, you know, attack an area. That's really the neutral standpoint of the argument is. And Generation Kill probably paints that picture best. There are a couple of scenes and things like that that are kind of playing to the audience. But in my eyes, after watching the whole miniseries, it's a pretty accurate representation of you know, that kind of atmosphere. Hmm.
It'd be interesting to see what the finished product is like.
Way to bring the show downward, Cornelius. What the fuck, man? I guess we didn't have to lead with it.
I just think like that this has to be done right. And if it is done right, it'll be great.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be something to remember. It'll be,
and if anyone's going to do it right, it's the video game industry, right?
Yeah. That's, you know, the
if anyone knows how to handle sensitive material, sensitive subject matter, it's video game developers. I'd be interested to play a game like this because it just seems very different, very new. And I like those really like informative types of games, even though they often come across very educational and not very fun. There was one on the Inuit culture in Alaska.
Yeah.
I think you played that one as well. God, I can't remember what it was called.
It was a beautiful game, but it wasn't
wasn't much of a game.
Yeah,
but it had a lot of footage, like actual footage from up there, and it taught you a lot about their beliefs and cultures. So I feel like anytime a game like leans too heavily into like the message or the education, there it is, Never Alone. Decent game. Anytime it leans too heavily in that direction, you're sacrificing the gameplay. Black Friday was great. Like it really helped me to understand that situation on Black Friday, that revolution, because I was like, God, who's the good guy in this? And then, you know, really when you start to understand it, there is no good guy, which is often the case in wars and revolutions.
Sniper, what else has High Wire Games made? Because this seems like a lofty goal. Just from the screenshots, the level of graphics they're going for, it's almost going to have to be a walking simulator.
I mean, I could see how, like, in 2009, the war was still going on in 2009. So I could see how people were just like, nah, I don't know about this.
Right.
But I don't know. Like Warconius said, you really got to wait until you see the end
product. Yeah, this is their only game. Good luck, fellas. Mm-hmm. I hope you pull it off.
So one last comment I have about this, and it relates to video games, is like a quote from Niko Bellic, which is also a quote from like a Russian philosopher. And like it has to do with like really just blaming soldiers for like political things and stuff. And really they're just doing kind of like their job in a sense. Is war is when the young and stupid are tricked by the old and bitter into killing each other.
Yeah.
And it really hits home. But you can't like go, oh, these guys are profiting off of it, or oh, these guys are politicizing it. No, they're just trying to tell their stories, I think, you know.
And doing their job.
Yeah, and doing their job.
Hmm. Nick, what the hell is Hellish Quark? Quart?
Hellish Quart. So this is a game right now. It looks a little janky. It's a sword fighting game that apparently takes place in like the late 17th century or 17th century. And it's a dueling simulator and you have like stances and things like that. And it's all about just dueling. And so far they have four different types of fighters. Like I said, it looks a little janky. You have, you know, a short sword wielding swordsman. You have a rapier wielding swordsman. Oh. You have a couple of different. You have four to be exact. They're going to be introducing more. Some of the animations are there and they're working great. And then some of the animations are just a little janky.
I mean, if the gameplay is there, then who cares?
Yeah,
it's like there's decapitations and some pretty bloody stuff in this.
Yeah, I just saw a guy's face get cleft in twain, dude.
Yeah, so there's another one where like you block backhanded like this, and then he twists his sword and he puts it in his forehead. But it's apparently supposed to be the most accurate sword-based fighting game.
What's interesting on my radar is the perspective. It's a lot like
it looks like Mortal Kombat.
Like exactly.
Or like Virtua Fighter almost.
For Honor? Is that what you're looking for?
No, I'm going to get it right now. It's the fighting game that where they use swords. It's been around. The Soul Calibur. It's almost like
Soul
Calibur. Because the camera's rotating around them.
Yeah, it's rotating just a little bit. Not just too much. Bit, yeah. And yeah, Soul Calibur, that's like the same as Virtua Fighter. Like the camera kind of moves a little bit. It's not like a completely profile shot like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. But yeah, I don't know. This could be interesting, man. I really liked War of the Roses and Chivalry, but then I could not get into For Honor like at all. So
did you ever play Mordhau?
Oh yeah, played Mordhau. Enjoyed that one, but I had I put so many hours into Chivalry and War of the Roses. By the time Mordhau came out, I was I was kind of over it.
That.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know where I really stand on these. Like, on one hand, I really enjoy these. I think For Honor was meant for controller, though. Really think
it
was set up for controller, and that's where I had a problem with it. But yeah, I don't know. I do enjoy these types of games. There's no... there is a release date, February 16th, but no price yet. Although they do have a demo.
Is that like 3 days? 2 days?
Yeah, 2 days. 2 days when this episode comes out.
Another thing that's on my radar is Chivalry 2, which is apparently supposed to be releasing this year. Hmm. So shout out for that to Bobby. I didn't even realize that you like those style of games.
Yeah, I mean, War of the Roses was, or maybe it was just War of Roses. No, it was War of the Roses. That was my first one, my introduction to that. And then I found out, everybody's playing Chivalry. So I kind of switched over that. And that has a different engine, and I didn't quite like the feel of it as much. Plus, I had, like, upgraded and learned all the little things about War of the Roses. But, yeah, I went through a phase where I was really into that.
Did you ever play Kingdom Come Deliverance?
No, I have it, but I have not played it.
Yeah, so it's like Chivalry, but even more meta.
I thought that was more of an RPG.
It tells a story.
It's an RPG, but the combat is, like...
Okay.
Yeah, the RPG, it tells a story, and there's a lot of like crucial things and decisions you can make, but the actual combat gets extremely detailed. Like, you're wearing this kind of armor, and you only can carry this much weight, so your right-handed movement is limited 20%. Like, it gets really detailed as far as like how much armor you wear, what kind of weapons you're using.
Super realistic.
It's definitely a good time if you enjoy a Chivalry or a Mordhau or a War of Roses.
I think in War of the Roses, what really broke that game, at least at one point, they must have patched it, but everybody figured out the most effective strategy was just to go bare-ass naked with a big axe because you didn't have all the detriments of like the heavy armor.
Yeah.
And the axe did the most damage on one swing. So you could eventually just get in there and just get like one swing or two and then kill somebody with that. And you were a little more nimble than the other players.
Conan figured that shit out a long time ago, man.
Yeah, he was ahead of the game.
This entire episode, I've been hearing voices in the back.
I think that's Nick in his open headphones.
Sorry, let me move it away. I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
First, we got your robot voice. Now we got extra. God damn, dude. Bobby, hit me with this Becastled.
Becastled. What an odd name for a game, but I like it. Becastled is... It was posted in our Discord, and I think Captain Gummy described it as they are billions, but in a medieval castle. Completely different art design. It's like a 3D animation camera moves all around. And it's, what would you call that art design? That's very, like, I've seen this in a ton of games. It's very simple, but it's 3D, and it's kind of cartoonish and colory. I'm trying to think of some games that have a similar one.
It's very minimalistic.
It's pretty minimal. I'm thinking of like Goddess, but that's not a good reference. Nobody knows that game.
Cav G.
Yeah, it's a little like Totally Accurate Battle Simulator.
Before the king looks just like that. Anyway, there's a lot of games that look like this.
Yeah. So basically, you're building a big giant castle and you're defending it from waves and waves of invaders. And I don't know, man. I've always just liked, ever since I was a little kid, I've loved the medieval setting. So I'm sold on that. Catapults, you know, soldiers, horses, like all that stuff. I'm digging
it. This looks fun.
Yeah. And then I do like those games. I feel like those wave survival games where you build up a fortress and try to defend it against the waves, that's kind of like a simplified version of an RTS almost. Like Conan Unconquered did this. Although when I bought Conan Unconquered, I thought it was a regular RTS, but it turns out it's just, no, you defend your base as long as you can. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a different style of game. So I don't know. I might check this out. It came out February 8th. It's already out. Not a lot of people playing it, but the reviews are pretty positive. And the game is $13.49, but I think that's on sale right now for the Steam sale.
Bobby, you bought that Conan game because of your love of Conan, right?
No, I bought it because it was an RTS by the guys who were from Westwood, who had made Command & Conquer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I mean, the Conan theme was fine. Sure, I can get on board with that.
Oh, okay, see. Okay, never mind. But I was going to ask if you ever read the books, the old books.
No, never have.
Okay. Nick, what else you got?
I got Devour. As someone who is super into co-op horror games, this is a game where it's like, I don't know what the genre is, where it's like, it is co-op horror, but there's like a subgenre in like, there's always something chasing you, as weird as that sounds. And that's kind of like a genre in itself. Like, it's like Amnesia and some other
things. Yeah, the run and hide.
I think that's what we call it.
Jumped off my chair, dude. That was fucking freaky.
Yeah, that was
great. Trailer fucking freaky.
And yeah, so obviously we're playing this. You know, I can play with Sniper and Bobby and Emilio can play.
No, you can't. No, I won't be there. I got homework.
Apparently you play as friars, and you're exorcism friars.
Friars always get slaughtered, dude. In every movie, everything. Friars, the only Friar Tuck, is that the one? There's one that's
Friar
been fighting
Tuck
back.
From Robin Hood.
All other friars get slaughtered. That's what they do.
Do
that's
friars do exorcisms?
I don't know.
In this game, they do, Bobby.
It's four players. There we go. We can play together. We can all fucking four play together. I just read that right now. I thought it was co-op because I watched a bunch of videos of co-op.
Yeah, so, 1 to 4 players.
I love these kind of games. I love, you know, the co-op horror games. You know, one person dies and they cut their mic in Discord. But yeah, we should play it. It's on sale for Somerset. I mean, for Lunar New Year.
$4.99. Not bad.
Yeah, $5.
I'm going to be honest, man. The graphics and the animation look pretty janky, but if the gameplay's there, then it's still enjoyable. Yeah, only 800 people playing this game right now.
What's the 83%? That's pretty good for the graphics are hard pill to swallow. But if they're getting 83 with these graphics, it's got to be decent.
Mm-hmm. From my understanding, it's kind of like that game Biped that you were talking about earlier, where it's like you can beat it within like 2 or 3 hours.
Oh, gotcha.
And by the Emilio Marquez ratio of is it fucking worth it or buying or not, if it can entertain you for 2 hours for the price of a movie ticket, then it's worth it.
No, I think $5.49. You completely fucked up my scale. It's $1 per hour of entertainment, dude. And this is coming in way underneath that. $4.30 for 3 hours, way off.
Come on, man. You can spare.
Cannot recommend.
$4.30.
I don't know if movie theaters are the metric or movie tickets are the metric we want to go by now that we can't even go to the movies. I always like to think of things in prices of airport beers because then it never seems so bad.
Yeah.
What are they? $13 for a Stella.
$9? $8, $9?
I don't know. I never got beer at the airport. I always got shots of stuff, and it was like, oh, you want a double? All right, $20. Really, dude? Really? Wow.
There has been some drinks that I've ordered, and I'm like, what do you mean? I ordered like a double. This is my clubbing days. I ordered a double vodka on the rocks. Mm-hmm. It was $54.
What, like downtown San Diego?
That was in Vegas.
Vegas. You know where they're really cheap? Mexico.
Yeah,
but you know,
okay. They're 20% COVID, dude.
Well, I mean now, yeah, but God, all right. Here's my super expensive drink story. So, I had heard about this place. There was like this uprising of these places called speakeasies. Maybe like 10 years ago, 15 years ago or something, that became really popular in downtown San Diego. And they tried to mimic the speakeasies of the 1920s, you know, the Prohibition era, where you would go in, you'd give a password, and then they would let you into like a secret place, you know, that was usually like in the back room or underneath of the actual restaurant. And you would go in there, and they would have these mixologists, you know, these people would make the fancy drinks. First of all, it was really hard to get into these places. Usually there was like a weird thing you had to do on social media and like to get like a pass into this. And
they're really small, usually.
They're super small, really small, like uncomfortably crowded. So you get in there, and then like some mixologist, you know, some hipster with like a bow tie and a mustache, it makes you like a drink, and they do it. This is not Cocktail with Tom Cruise, like they're not flipping bottles, but there's a lot of hand gesturing and stuff. Like it's a production, dude. You're paying for the show,
and they make that, but like the they're not using like orange zest out of a bottle or anything. They're muddling orange slices.
They're taking a big giant ice cube, and they're like,
there's like, labor like going picking. Into it.
They're doing everything like the hard way, and then they make you this big fancy drink, and then you knock it back in one slurp, and you're like, oh, that was good. All right, how much? $33. Okay, plus tip. All right. Yeah.
So was it $33?
So here's the thing. Like, I had heard about this place, and I'd never made it into one during my drinking career. And then after I had stopped drinking, I was with some friends, and we were at a place that had one of these. It was called the Grand Experiment or something like that. I don't know.
Noble Experiment.
The Noble Experiment. Okay, you know the place.
I do.
Like, you go, yeah. And
I'm still in my drinking career.
But it's at this restaurant I've been to a dozen times, because it was right by where I used to work, and they had, like, instead of like chips, they would bring out popcorn. That was, like, their thing. They brought out popcorn.
You know you're all about that.
And you know I like the popcorn.
It is noble after all.
So anyway, so I'm there, we're eating at this place, and I'm like, oh, this is...
I see you, like, making a big deal, like, the popcorn's free? Is the popcorn free?
And it just keeps coming.
He's climbing up. Is the popcorn
by the basket?
Free?
Oh, God. I think it's called The Neighborhood. Is that place still there? Uh-huh. Yeah. Good spot.
Great hamburgers, yeah.
Yeah, good hamburgers. They make a PB&J there, too, which sounds ridiculous, but it's great. It's all toasted and shit. Anyway, so we're out there, and we're just eating with friends, and they're like, oh, by the way, there's a speakeasy thing, and I start explaining to what it is, and they're like, oh, we got to get in. So we ended up talking to the lady, and you're supposed to get on a reservation list. We give this big, long, boring, like, speech about how, like, oh, my buddy's, you know, new in town. We're trying to show him around. This is, like, a big deal, blah, blah, blah. Finally, they squeeze us in. These places are already cramped, and they're, like, packing us in there. Even though we don't really belong. So we're like crammed in this little corner, and they're getting the drink. So I didn't really get the experience. I didn't drink anything, but I just noticed, like, you know, I think my buddy was a little disappointed with the drinks and the overall experience. Yeah, the price. But I mean, you're paying, you expect that when you go downtown, especially.
And it's also a talking point. Like, you can talk about just the place you're at.
Yeah, you can.
For like 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah,
easy. With like a girl that you're taking out for the first time or whatever. You know,
you can bring it up on your video game podcast.
There is a place in Vegas. Oh, I just read the name of it. Anyway, it's reversed. So the speakeasy is outside where you drink, and then they take you into the restaurant. The restaurant's in the speakeasy, and the outside is the bar. They just reversed the roles. It's super expensive, but it's really good. It's at the Cosmopolitan.
Oh, okay. How did we even get here again?
I don't know. We're still out on the radar, I think.
Yeah, I think we're about done with on the radar.
I think Nick should head it off, huh? Because he's got the most to talk
about. Yeah, you got a lot to talk about, Nick. Tell us about it.
So this is Valentine's Day. We're doing this podcast on Valentine's Day. So happy Valentine's Day to Chris, Bobby, and Amelia, and my wife. So, you know, my wife wanted to play something together. And, you know, see if our cooperation and brain skills can match each other. So we decided to play Biped. Sadly enough, it is available on PS4 and some other platforms, but we didn't want to play it on PC because apparently it's easier on PlayStation 4. So we ended up playing it on PlayStation 4. I know Amelia's talked about this game before. There were some definite moments in this game where you get frustrated, but it's a game where you play as little robots and you control each leg with a thumbstick. So you move your leg like you move your left leg by swiping your thumbstick forward, and you can glide and things like that, and the puzzles get incrementally harder. The game is not difficult. It just requires extreme communication. We were stuck on like one of the puzzles in the first, not, I shouldn't say puzzles, but one of the actions we needed to do on the second level for like 20 minutes. And it's a great game to play. It's on sale right now for Lunar New Year's, especially if I get a significant other or a good friend you want to try to play a game with. It's cute. It's got good animations. I wouldn't say there's not really a story, but little side characters are cute. You play as little robots, so they communicate with beeps and boops. But it's great.
Didn't you play this game with Chad, Emilio?
Yeah. We thought it was great. We were drinking and just laughing and having a really good time with it.
Yeah, I remember you guys enjoying that.
It's got 93% if you guys are wondering.
There was a story about it, too. I can't remember. I think there was like a puzzle you guys had a really hard time with. What I'm curious about, though, it says the release date is March 26th, 2020, but you guys played this a long time ago.
No. Well,
not 2020.
Yeah, it might have been because he came down.
That's less than a year ago.
Yeah. I don't know.
It had to. I feel like
in early access.
Maybe.
But it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't more than like 2 years ago.
Okay, maybe.
Oh, yeah. The Nintendo Switch release date was March 26, 2020.
Oh, okay. But on the Steam page, it says that as well. I don't know. Something's off. That must be incorrect or something.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's won awards from 2019. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper, dude. Like, did this game release?
You going to play this with your girl, dude? Sniper?
No, we're playing a game right now where we're like balls of yarn, and it's exactly like this, so I think we're going to do that.
Oh, gotcha.
Balls of yarn over robots, okay.
It's very Canadian.
All right. Yeah, not bad. I played a puzzle game, too, this week, and it was not multiplayer. It was single player. I played The Pedestrian. So this was a game that kind of flew under the radar of everybody last year, I feel like. I heard some people talking about it, and everybody that did speak about it said it was really, really good. We're looking at the Steam page right now, and it says overwhelmingly positive for both all reviews and recent reviews. It is a really good puzzle game. It's really good in the sense of a puzzle game where it's not too difficult and it's not too easy. It kind of escalates in difficulty and complexity as it goes on, introduces new factors. Like it's just a very well-designed puzzle game, which I really enjoy. On top of that, and I think the big selling point for it, it's got this really, really interesting visual style. You're playing a character from Road Signs. So, you know, like the guy or the girl, like you think about like a bathroom, like a restroom, you have like the men's room and it's just got the guy, which is that figure,
you know the guy.
Yeah. You know, the guy. And then the woman is the same thing, but it's got the little points out for the dress.
Right.
So you get to choose which character you want to play as, and then you play as that character and you're jumping through signs around town. You start out in the sewer, you work your way up to the street, you go into offices and you jump onto like a road sign, and each sign is its own little puzzle. And then there's parts where you have to rearrange the signs and link tubes up to them. What's really cool about this is you're solving the puzzles on the road sign, right? And then in the background is this really vibrant background of like a city or an office or something. There's a lot going on back there and it looks really interesting and cool. And yet you are just doing stuff in the foreground. Like you can't even go back there.
Do the things in the background ever have anything to do with what's going on?
Yeah. So what you're doing when you're jumping through these signs here, you'll like connect you'll find a piece of a battery. By solving a puzzle, you'll hook that up, then you'll find a cable and you'll hook that up to something else. So then it opens a door. So in the real world, outside of your road sign world, a door actually opens up and then it allows you to travel through the sign to the next area. It's really quite clever. Like that whole layer on top, or actually maybe underneath or behind it, is what really sets this game apart as far as puzzle games go. I mean, and then it's just a solid puzzle game at the core. So I would definitely recommend this. It's on sale right now for $13.99 for the Steam summer sale, but that's going to be over like in a day, I think, not when this podcast airs. It was on sale before the summer sale.
Lunar New Year.
The Lunar New Year sale. Yeah, sorry. But it was on sale on GOG, and it might still be after Steam has gotten or stopped the sale.
Did you get your dollar per hour? Probably not. You didn't get 15 hours out of this.
No, not yet.
Oh, you're not done?
No.
I assume it's a short game because of the, I don't know, the way it looks, so it's not short?
I don't know. Maybe we could look it up on how long to beat. It seems like it goes on a while, and it's a puzzle game, so your mileage may vary.
You know, right.
A puzzle game can take you, it could take you a long time to solve one puzzle, very short amount of time to solve another. So when
Depending
you look
how
it
dumb
up,
you are.
Well, what I like about this is the puzzles are
paced well.
Well, they're solvable. Okay, so I'm seeing here single player 45 people poll, and they're saying about 5 hours. Okay, yeah. So I'm more than halfway through.
That's
not bad
for a puzzle game.
Yeah, because you can't take too much of a puzzle game.
Yeah,
it gets old after a while. But what
4 hours everywhere? Were you saying five?
Four hours 47 minutes.
Oh, gotcha.
I rounded up. But what I like about it is it's solvable. You just have to think through it. There are a lot of puzzle games out there, and a lot of old ones are guilty of this, where you either get it or you don't. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you don't get it, you're never going to get it. So you run into a lot of walls. A lot of the LucasArts games were like that, where they had these really abstract combinations of items that you use to make something. But this is like, it all seems doable. What I figured out works really well with this. Here's the tip. If you're going to play this game, work backwards. So you're usually trying to get your character to a certain area, like collect an item and then move to the exit. If you start at the exit and start moving things around and connecting tubes, working backwards, I find that to be a lot more effective. Mm. All right. And that's all I got. What do you got? Yeah, it's a solid game.
Go ahead, Nick.
I think Leslie would love this. She loves puzzle games. Mm-hmm. The hard thing is, like, you know, now we have a baby. It's like, oh, we got to wait until she falls asleep to really time invest. Mm-hmm. But I think she'll love this. I think I'm just going to sneak on her Steam account and buy it for her. Like, oh, look.
Roger.
Yeah, you sound like Darth Vader again, dude. Great pick, dude. No. That was a great drop. I guess I'll go while you try to fix that.
Sure.
Sorry, the only game I played again was The Last of Us 2 this week. I didn't play that much. I have a lot of free time for video games this week. I did want to talk about the protagonist, Ellie, and I think why people enjoy the storytelling in this game so much. If you play the first game, Ellie's like, I don't know, 12 or 10. And you could she's a pretty girl, and you could tell that she could probably going to be a beautiful woman. And then you see her now as a woman and not so pretty anymore. And she wears her life on her face, dude. You can see that this person has been through some shit. And, you know, what makes this game so good for me is the realism, and down to this much, where you can see that, like, she's beaten down to a point where, I mean, not like she has no hope, like she's very confident in her abilities and stuff like that. But, mm-hmm. You can see years of wear and tear, and graphically it's almost not even graphically. You see it in her eyes. She's like, she's older than her years, just from the shit she's been through.
So do you think this is something I've been going back and forth on? Cause I used to be in the camp that said, you don't need, high fidelity graphics to have a lot of emotion in a video game, or, you know, to really help with the story or the connection to the story. But I don't know, lately I kind of feel like, yeah, you do have to have pretty good graphics. Like, I don't know, I just find it harder to get into games that are trying to pitch something very very emotional, and it's cartoonish graphics or highly stylized or something like that. I don't know, I think the photorealism might be the way to go.
It depends if it's done well and if you have the money to do this. Like, this is
anyone can do this.
Yeah.
But I mean, can you think of any game that doesn't have photorealistic graphics that you had a strong emotional response to.
To the Moon made me cry like a little girl.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good example.
Does Portal 1 count? I mean, sorry, Portal 2.
I wasn't emotionally invested in either one of those. You're still like a robot.
For some odd reason, I've cried for Portal 2 when I played it.
Isn't that like a comedy?
Yeah, it's a comedy, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I finished the game and I was like, this is so sad.
Something else must have been going on.
Yeah, I think some other shit was going on in your life, dude.
I think I was having so much fun. I was sad that it was ending.
The game that you play as the Yarn character.
I didn't play that, but I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, that one, it tugged at the heartstrings. Maybe because you are a piece of string. Hey. But that's actually a beautiful game. But yeah, I think you can do it. Final Fantasies, that tugs on the heartstrings a lot of the time for a lot of people.
I think that's like, I don't know. I haven't played a lot of Final Fantasy, but I know they are very long games. And at a certain point, you just develop a connection with the characters because you've spent so much time with them.
Yep. But the graphics here are part of the storytelling. And I've noticed, you know, the PS4 is ancient. Like, it's been around for so long, and they do such a good job of drawing your eye where it needs to be on the characters and on things that are interactable. Like, if you look at the textures of the ground or the rubble, they're horrible, they're horrendous, but you're not supposed to look there, and you usually don't unless you're looking for it. You know, they really did a good job of putting the power, getting every ounce of that PS4 horsepower. Nick, I guess we're just going
to... I think you hit the nail on the head. The graphics definitely help with the emotional connection. The humanity of the situation really helps with the connection. I think what you were describing earlier as far as, like, Ellie's face and, like, demeanor, I think what her character goes off of is that she has given up on, like, the human aspect of humanity. In the sense, like, she's like, what should have happened hasn't. She's lost so much to gain so little. Mm. And that's why, you know, she's so rough around the edges, I guess you can say.
Yes.
And it's not because she's just a rough person. It's just that her life situations have caused her to be this way. And the narrative and like things like that they've done make her a great character. I haven't finished the game, so I can't give you my 100% review on it. I think I'm really going to try to play it this week. I know I said that last week, but I'm definitely going to try to play it. But like you said, like if you look at the gravel, it looks like doo-doo, but the game doesn't make you look at gravel. It makes you look at the characters and where you're going. So,
yeah. We're just going to have to roll with robot voice, dude, especially since you're the only one who played video games this week. keep on going.
I think it's my upload. Because I was talking earlier, I didn't have any problems at all, but for some odd reason, my internet is super slow right now. I just did a speed check. So, two quick things that I can knock out back-to-back. So, last week, I talked about Total War Warhammer 3, and there was a update about a day after I talked about it for Total War Warhammer 2, and it didn't change much. It was a lot of things to nod to what's to come. So, for example, like, no gameplay changes, no changes to how units work, no new units or anything, but they started changing the way that some of the parts of the maps look to kind of, like, tell the future of what's to come in the next game. So, for example, there's, like, the Wood Elf area has a lot of trees, and it's nice, and it's pretty, it's got flowers, but one of the Wood Elf areas is near the north, and canonically, it's frozen. And so it's like a winter forest wonderland. In Total War Warhammer 2, it wasn't like that. But Total War Warhammer 3, it's supposed to be accurate. And so they've updated the map in Total War Warhammer 2 just to kind of tease you a little bit.
Like the frost is coming. Like the ice is coming.
Yeah. The ice is there. The map has changed to have snow on it. And so... that's just like a little Easter egg. So if you have played Total Warhammer 2, it'd be cool just to see them. Because there are some ones like, oh, all of a sudden this person's dead now. And like, all of a sudden this person's now in power. Or all of a sudden there's enemies showing up in different areas as they shouldn't be, or they're actually showing up to what they're going to be, where they're going to be showing up in Total War Warhammer 3. So
it's almost like they're turning 2 into a 2.5.
Like, exactly. So it like I said, it doesn't change the way how the game's played. It doesn't change, you know, it doesn't add any units or anything like that, but it's a little taste, you know, a little dab.
And they didn't have to do that.
This game. No, not at all.
It just, it's nice. It's nice for the fans.
And apparently, according to Reddit, they're going to continue doing this. They're going to continue just adding like tiny little things to the game to keep teasing people that are playing it. They say mid to late 2021 for the newest game release. And people are thinking July for some odd reason. Creative Assembly likes releasing games in July and August. So I think they're just every month, they're just going to put a little bit more salt on the wound and just keep people interested, you know?
Yeah. Cool.
And then kind of in the same vein, I guess you can say, as far as like, you know, nods to people playing the game and looking at the details, there are new Rust drops. So Rust has been in the limelight for the past 4 weeks, 5 weeks, and it's still going surprisingly strong. There's a lot of people now RPing in Rust. For example, I run an Izakaya now on my server, and so I have like Japanese decorations in my restaurant, and I serve up sushi and I serve up barbecue and stuff like that. And so you get rewards in game for watching Twitch streamers. So if you go up, you can see that, you know, you receive guns. You don't receive the actual gun, you receive a skin for the gun. And then some of the stuff that you receive is themed based off of the streamer itself. For example, there's a streamer named Boxbox, and he literally gives you a skin for a box. And it makes the box, which normally looks like a box made out of wood, it makes it look like a cardboard box. And so it's free. You can literally just click on the stream or on the item on that screen, and it'll take you to their Twitch page. You can literally just mute it, and you're good to go. You'll get it within 2 hours. So you have to watch a person for 2 hours to get that item.
I don't think I've seen integration like that before. Is that common now on Twitch?
So from my understanding, it started with another game with CSGO a long time ago, and someone was like, it's not really effective, right? But from what I've seen and from what I've experienced, the game to kind of blow this up was Escape from Tarkov. And you're like, oh, you just like Escape from Tarkov, and that's why you're talking about it. What it was is that Escape from Tarkov did this drop thing where it's like you link your Twitch account to your Escape from Tarkov account, and you link it to your and then once you link them, you can watch a streamer, and then you have the chance of getting literally any item in the game randomly. So like you can get anywhere from like a Red Bull, which is worth like 20 ruples, to like a key card, which is like worth 40 million ruples. And so more games are starting to integrate that. Like I know, what's the game? There's a game that runs off of skins as well. And I can't remember for the life of me. But regardless, a lot of games are starting to do it, and a lot of devs are doing it that have cosmetic based, you know, abilities in games. And so it's, I think we're going to see more of it. I think we're going to see more integration with Twitch where if you watch somebody, you get a reward. This is round 5, which is the 5th week it's been going on. So
I'm guessing you can't watch multiple streams at once, get a bunch of drops.
So that happened the first week. You were able to watch all the streams at once, and if they were live, and then get multiple items at once. But they obviously saw a drop in viewership when you know everybody got 6 of the 9 items in the first day, and you know nobody kept watching. But so now you have to watch, and then you just switch whenever you know that you know someone else is hopping on.
The first time I saw this was in Elder Scrolls Legends. They were doing pretty good giveaways for just watching somebody stream it. I think they were giving away packs. You would just get packs for watching streams. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to watch streams.
Through Twitch?
Yeah, through Twitch. Yep. That was a long time ago. Yeah. Whenever I was playing that game.
Yeah, was that Was that before Amazon bought Twitch? Must have been. When did that happen? Like 2016?
I want to say I was playing in 2017, but I don't know.
But yeah, it's all time-based. I think we're definitely going to see more of this. Rust blew up because of the drops. Like, obviously, it's been a game that's been around for like 8 years. And like, all of a sudden, the game, the people playing it, like the concurrent players literally like quadrupled within 3 days.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
Because of Twitchers blowing it up.
Grand Theft Auto 5. It's kind of like a dead game. And then RPing just fucking brought it back. You know, they've made this wonderful world. Now people are just using it, you know? COVID.
Lockdown. What's nuts about that, too, is like most of the time, if you want to be a part of an RP server or own an RP server, you have to pay real money to own an RP server. Because there's private server hosting that enables the mods for RPing. But if you go on like an RP server by yourself, some of them, I would say most of them, require you to be whitelisted. And some of them require like paid entry. So even like those companies that are hosting servers and stuff are making money off of it as well.
That's good. And they should. They're paying for the lights to stay on.
Yeah. Well, speaking of servers, we're actually hosting a server now for Valheim because that game has been so popular on our Discord.
Not only is it popular, Bobby, in our Discord, but apparently it's now the third most played game in Steam history with a concurrent population at one point over 360,000 concurrent players.
Wow. Good for them, man.
Which is, and it's not even like done. Like it's not even a completed game. Mm-hmm. Like they have like a 9 month release chart for until the game is done.
I hope this doesn't fuck them over, man. Sometimes
I don't think it will.
A crazy amount of money.
I think they made their money already.
That's the thing.
Yeah,
you know, if they were in this for the money and they got the money.
I don't think they are, though. And I think they did it very
wisely. You know nothing about them.
I know this. They're being published by Coffee Stain Games, same publisher as Deep Rock Galactic. And they're taking a very similar approach as Deep Rock Galactic. Let's release a game that is functional, really good, strong gameplay loop. Like, it's just good right out of the box. And say, well, guess what? We're going to continue to develop this.
This is
just going to get better. Like, you come out of the gate really strong like that. And I'm glad to see this is working because this is what you want to see. This is the story you want to see in early access. There's so many bad examples of early access. And this is like people using it as it should be used. They're getting a lot of player feedback. They're going to be developing it, like doing a lot of development to it and adjusting it based on what they see people doing or the feedback that they get. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I can't play this game yet. I don't have the time to commit to something like this, but
it made Discord news that you put it on your favorites or no, your wish list.
Yeah.
Somebody came in. Hey guys, Bobby just put it on his wish list.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't surprised that it wasn't on sale during the Lunar New Year sale. It just came out. Why would it be? And it's selling like millions of copies. Anyway.
Yeah. They should raise the price.
Yeah. Well, and they probably will when it goes out of early access. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. You never know what's going to happen with that. Sometimes they raise it. Usually they don't. Sometimes they lower it. I don't know.
What are these graphs we're looking at? Or does this have nothing to do with Valheim?
I think these are the concurrent players.
That's concurrent players versus Twitch viewers. And even when the Twitch viewers go down, the concurrent players continue to rise. And I feel like when Bobby eventually plays this game, everybody in the DLG podcast is going to hop on the server and like form like a curved line, be like one of us, and then Bobby's gonna be like, "Well, this is weird."
You know, here's a scary thought that I had the other day. I always say I'm gonna play these games when I got time, you know, and then I realized, am I ever gonna have time? Like, is that ever gonna happen? Like, do you see any foreseeable future for you where you're just like, "Oh, dang, I got all this free time. I'm gonna play video games."
I told JP Diddy this. I was like, "Dude, we're just gonna work to provide for our families and wait for this golden time where we're going to play all these video games we buy every week, and then we're just going to die. And then that's it. That's the end of the story. You have a giant pile of video games and never got the time to play them. I would have to break a leg or something like that or get COVID again."
Yeah, I don't know, dude. Even if, like,
you're go ahead, your responsibilities. Like, you have a list of things you need to do.
Yeah.
But Valheim, you know?
I liked one of the memes so much where I actually asked Days to go find it for me so I could show it to Ray. It's a priest looking up, trying to not be wooed by this wench. And the wench's butt says Valheim, and his prayers say, like, me working from home. And he's just, like, trying to resist the wench bending over it. So that was brilliant. Whoever came up with that is fucking brilliant. We're looking at the classic, you know, girlfriend mad for the guy looking at the other girl. It says Heim, Val, and in Tynes, because it's for both of them. Anyway, it's hard to explain.
So the guy, it's the classic meme of the guy walking with his girlfriend and he turns around to look and whistle at a passing by girl. The guy says Val, his girlfriend says in Tynes, as in Valentine's, and then the girl that he's looking at says Heim, as in Valheim. Yeah.
Yeah. It's super.
Just when he thought that meme was dead.
Bob explained it like a smart person.
Yeah.
Just when he thought that meme was dead. Are those the same girl?
No.
They could be, though. I don't know, dude.
They're very similar.
I'm just saying, it could be. It's Tenet, dude. It's the same girl.
So where are we? What are we talking about? Oh, let's get some stories from the Valheim. What's going on over there? You guys beat the last boss yet?
I'll just pull them out of my ass. Yeah, so stories, Valheim server. Lots of fun things are happening. There's this mass of bones that's one of the last bosses. And that's what we're gearing up to fight as a group. We're going to need everyone, basically. Except for Cricket did spend 2 hours soloing him last night when he was drunk. But that's just Cricket. Like, everyone else is like, we can't do it alone. We can't do it with three people. We can't do it with six people. We've all died. We need everyone to beat this mass of bones. Other than that, you guys watch Stargate SG-1? Atlantis? Anything?
No. Saw the movie.
Oh, good Canadian content. Filmed in beautiful, sunny Vancouver. Yeah, so the movie. We made a big gate room because you have these portals you can make, and we made this big construction project on the server, big gate room. It's like Legos. We're just playing Legos at this point. After we defeat the bone mass, I don't know if there's anything past him.
Yet. Do they have a roadmap out for this? Did you say that, Nick? There's a roadmap for Valheim?
Yeah, they announced a roadmap, and it's on the Reddit, where it's like they're each feature they're trying to integrate over time, and I think it's a 9-month roadmap, and every month they want to integrate a new feature. There it is, yeah. And it goes longer as well, so.
Oh, but you don't know what they are.
Ships and sea. No.
I mean, you can guess. Hearth and Home. People think it's like shit for your
Cult
home.
Of the
you
Wolf. Guess. Cult of the Wolf is when Bobby comes in.
Multiplayer Bobby interactions, combat improvement, moon phases. So yeah, they're kind of cryptic. You can't really tell what it is. But I'd assume there's going to be more bosses, as well as just reconfiguring some of the already existing content.
Yeah.
But I'm very cynical and skeptical about roadmaps. But if the game is already good and they have a roadmap, then yeah, sure, dude, I'll buy into it. But if your game's shit like Anthem and then you throw out a roadmap, not good enough.
And they were supposed to.
I didn't play Anthem. That's unfair to say.
I love Bobby. He's like, if your game is shit like Anthem.
that game gets enough grief. I shouldn't contribute to it.
I liked it.
A lot of people did, man. A lot of people did. It had its fans. Amelia, why don't you tell us about what the hell is going on with your computer? Because that's pretty crazy.
What do you mean?
Well, for the first time since you've had your computer.
Man. It was lame. I was playing Borderlands 3. I was just jumping on because I had a couple minutes. I'm like, let me just get rid of some of these side quests from, like, I have like 60 side quests. And what's cool is you can go back and play them and it'll scale to your level, which is nice. So I get to the first one and blue screen of death, first time on my computer. And, I'm drunk, by the way, at this point. And, I boot back up and it says, hey, do you want to boot from the cloud save or your PC save? And I arbitrarily picked one. I was just like, whatever, I pick one. and I load up Borderlands 3. Two of my characters are there. My main character that I've put maybe 80 hours in says corrupt. I was like, this must have happened. This is on Epic, by the way, because it used to be an Epic exclusive. It's the only game that I play on Epic. And I was like, this must have happened to somebody. So I go and I look, and I was like, yeah, just go, and you go to your file for your character, and you take out all the numbers. I guess it's the error numbers. You take them out, and then you just save it again. And me being drunk, I maybe messed it up. I don't know what happened. And it didn't work. And so I was like, oh, my God, did I really lose my character? And then I restarted again. And, oh, I did a, you know what I did? I did a system restore. Trying to like.
Oh, on the computer.
Yeah, on the computer. And that didn't work either. And so I was pretty much fucked. And then I couldn't open Chrome. And I was like, what is going on with my computer? I've never had a problem with my computer ever. Mm-hmm. Like nothing. Everything always runs and it's fine. And then I look at my CPU usage. I open up, your task manager.
Task manager, yeah.
And 97% of my CPU is going towards Windows Defender. And I'm like, what is going? I don't know. And I can't open Chrome. I was like, I definitely have a virus. So I do a deep scan and a quick scan. Nothing comes up. I restarted once again. Everything's fine right now. I mean, I barely used it, like 5 minutes. But yeah, my character's gone from Borderlands 3.
That sucks, man.
It sucks. It sucks.
That's, I mean, hopefully your computer is all right. Like the hardware is okay, but that you must have had a lot of hours in that Borderlands character.
Yeah, a lot. It's a
can
drag.
We get taps to be played for Emilio's character?
Damn. I mean, I'm surprised. Obviously, there were cloud saves, and you must have chose the load from the local save or something.
I think that's what I did. And then as soon as I logged in, it overrode whatever cloud save was on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ugh, that sucks. Well, yeah.
I don't know. I started with the other character. There's the Mosey, the soldier girl. But like my heart's not in it. I was like, I don't want to play this from the beginning. You know, I don't know. We'll see.
Hmm. All right. Time for listener questions.
All right.
First one is from Zankludon. No idea how to pronounce that. Has Emilio tried out the unit creator and workshop creations in tabs yet?
Thanks, Zanks. That's what I'm going to call him. It's a lot easier. I didn't know it was out yet, man. It's funny. With tabs, about once every 2 weeks, I'd load it up just to see if there was updates. And then I just kind of haven't done it in a long time. And this is the big one that I've been waiting for, because not so much that I want to create my own units, but I want to see what the public comes up with. Are we able to, from this screen, can we go to the workshop? Probably not, huh? You got to go to the client probably to see what's available.
No, I think you can from here. Maybe not. Maybe that's only in the Steam client.
So I'll get back to you next week. I'll check it out. And, you know, there's going to be fucking Star Wars characters and, you know, all your favorites. So that's what I really like about these kind of games. And I can't wait to get into them.
Cool. Next question from Warconius. In the spirit of Valentine's, what's your thoughts on romantic games or romantic moments in games? Here's my shout out for a romantic game co-op. And he's linked Haven. Now, Haven is a game that I'm aware of. I remember this getting a lot of publicity at some, some convention or gaming event. It's a co-op or a very romantic game, like an RPG co-op. You play as these two characters and you're sailing across. I totally remember like all the promotional stuff for this. Game came out, didn't even realize it.
Yeah.
But apparently it's good.
Yeah, overwhelmingly positive, at least the recent reviews. Maybe because of Valentine's Day, it looks like maybe that's mm-hmm. what was going on.
Well, I mean, the overall reviews are at 94%. I think got to get 95 for the overwhelming, it is really solid. 25 bucks, not too expensive.
Sam's so cynical. I would sit her down for this, and she'd be like, what the fuck is this bullshit? Like, romantic video game, this is dumb. I don't think I could get her to sit down and play this. Although it does look romantic. Ooh, some sexy time.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, they're brother and sister. And then, And then they kind of get physical, and then they're like, no, probably not.
Well they could. Or stepbrothers.
Well, one's obviously a girl.
Oh, God.
But I don't know. Other romantic games or romantic moments in games?
I think we always bring it up.
Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time?
No. I don't know. Somebody else say something while I think about it. The sex scenes in Mass Effect, maybe just because Miranda was so goddamn hot, that was like, oh, this is actually sexy. And then the ones in The Witcher are fucking crazy good. They're like sex scenes in a movie. You know, you see some titties and it's well done, tastefully done.
Some tasteful nudes. Tastefully
done.
Yeah. Mass Effect. God, I remember Mass Effect. I think it was 3, maybe it was 2, but I was apparently putting out some signals that I wasn't aware of. And when you build relationships with characters, that affects the way they interact with you. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys on my ship, like, sat me down or like joined me, like at a table or something, and then totally came on to me. And I was like, where did that come from?
It was probably because you were trying to be nice, trying to get stuff out of him.
Maybe. Right. Like, I'm nice to everybody in the video game. I was doing the Paragon, so I was probably being nice to everyone, but this guy just... He took it a whole different way.
You're trying to get stuff from him.
I'm trying to get with the, the secretary or something. I can't remember what her position was. She's like the assistant, and then she's like, no, I'm gay. And then I'm like... All right. I'm just messing all this up.
I know which one you're talking about.
She's got the black hairs. Yeah. I was like, all right, I'm going to go with that one. Like the brunettes.
I'm surprised you didn't go after Edie, the robot lady.
Wait, the robot lady or the one with the mask with like the fog face?
Oh, yeah.
I ended up going for? And it's kind of sad because she was my second choice, but the main one, the blue chick with the tentacles in the back of her head.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Her race is insane, by the way. Like, as far as someone that I know, like, about Mass Effect, yeah, they're all female.
Or female-esque. But, they can mate with anybody, I think.
I kind of felt like, for the story, that made the most sense as far as a romantic relationship.
I always remember there was a character in Mass Effect that I loved. There was a race in Mass Effect 1 that can't put inflection in their voice, so they voice it.
Instead,
it's so great. So they're monotone. Mm-hmm. They can only talk like this. And in order to put inflection, they say it. And so they'd be like, striking rebuke. No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember that.
I thought it was so clever of the way they did it.
Yeah, and like to get a little further on that canon. So the reason why they can't do that is because their vocal cords never developed to be able to like send pitch. Mm-hmm. Because the gravity on their planet is 1,000 times stronger than ours on Earth.
Oh.
And so one other thing about their like body is that they can lift incredibly heavy things and they walk on all fours. And so like their whole job during like wars is to be artillery, like to be walking artillery. So like their wars are just fought at a distance. Like they can't fight hand to hand.
How do you know all this?
They shoot at each other from, cause I got really into Mass Effect 2. And they intrigued me so much.
They're
I keep forgetting
great.
Their name.
Yeah. It was a great...
Yeah, they're like,
fuck,
I'd love to take you out for a drink.
I was talking
sarcasm.
I was talking to John, JP Diddy, and he's never played Mass Effect. I'm like, dude, Legendary Edition is going to be perfect for you.
Yeah, that'd be great for people who've never played it. I didn't play it until a summer of 2015 or 16. Mm-hmm. And then I played all three of them straight through. But yeah, it was pretty crazy. Like to get that far in my life without playing any Mass Effect games and to experience them back to back is really cool. All right. Next question is from JP Diddy. This is for Emilio. He says, how does it feel to start cheating on the PC master race with a console? Do you feel guilty all the time or just when you think about your whore fingers touching a console day after day and not pleasuring your mouse and keyboard? Jesus, dude. As punishment for your infidelity, open the sent package on air. And we've got said package sitting right here.
Let's get into this. This is really well taped. So let's get into the last one. Well, I open this up.
Okay. Well, the last question is from Nick, and he says, "You got to fight a basic enemy from any video game. Who are you, fighting and why?
This is not Nick.
So let me give like a pre. Let me give like a pretense. Oh,
this is a different Nick. Okay,
this is a different Nick, right? Or is this you?
No, it's me. No, it's me. So like, so quick, like just like a creep pretense, right? So when I'm talking about basic enemy, like for example, a head crab in like Half-Life, or like the little wrinkly dudes from Dark Souls, like, or a Goomba from Mario, like you gotta face one kind of enemy, like you play in the first or second level, and you gotta fight them, like physically fight them,
in real life.
In real life, yeah.
Oh. EverQuest, the very first things that you fight on the front porches of Kinos, the very first city, are like not scary size, but like cat sized rats. And I feel like I could take a cat sized rat with like a stick pretty easily.
Bro, you get bit by one of those rats, you're fucked.
Yeah, I'm not gonna let it bite me, Nick. I'm not gonna let it bite
me. They're big.
It's literally my number one goal in this endeavor is not to let it bite me. I'll kick it. I think
you're gonna kick. How are you gonna kill it though?
I'm gonna hit it repeatedly with a big stick.
Okay.
I can take a rat.
We'll go to Mexico. We'll find the biggest rat we can get. And we'll make you fight it in a pit. We'll see how you feel.
There's some good stuff in here.
All right,
John, you're too good to me, man.
Are we ready?
No. Okay. Answer the question.
I don't know. I guess a kobold or something. I feel like I could take that guy.
A kobold would fuck you up,
dude. From what game, though? There's so many different kobolds.
From World of Warcraft. I think you say kobold, bro. Everybody knows who you're talking about.
Yeah, I think you're insane. They're so tall, and they have a pickaxe.
How tall are they, dude? They're like 3 feet tall.
How tall is a kobold?
By default, animals are stronger than humans. Like, way stronger, right? And they're like more animal than we are.
I think type in how tall kobold World of Warcraft.
2.5 feet.
Do you have your gun on you? If you had your gun, yeah.
Well, I could take that mano a mano, dude.
You just have your fists.
Yeah, dude, no problem. Kobold, easy. I mean, wow. I could pick a weaker enemy, but I'm trying to have a little bit of a challenge here.
Yeah, we're saying you pick too challenging, dude.
No. A kobold.
I think a kobold will fuck you up, man.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't want to take on one of those things. They're wiry.
Look at them.
At the very worst, they bite you with those big teeth.
I'm going with Dark Souls, the first enemies you face. They're like wrinkly bodies, and you can literally just punch them twice, and they just die.
There you go.
So I think it'll be fun just to walk around and like just deck somebody, and they just dissolve into ashes. You're like, that was easy.
And then 10 minutes
later, you get crushed by a giant demon.
Makes you feel awesome. Sniper, you got one for this, or you want us to pass on you?
I have no idea.
Not like a goblin from Valheim. What are they called? The little lizard dudes?
No, dude. I wouldn't pick anything that could kill me because I'm not a fighter. You know, I'm not going to fight a kobold. That's fucking
Canadian.
Like a Goomba, I just like jump on it, right?
Well, here's the thing. I planned for this moment. If someone picked Goomba, look how tall a Goomba is compared to fucking Mario. All right, and Mario is supposed to be like 5'4". And they're the same height. Not only that, you fucking touch them once and you get ejected 10 feet in the air and die instantly. So, like, that's a fucking hard person to fight.
Well, John, I'm feeling way more guilty now. Because you sent me he sent me all his PS4 games, dude, because he got his PS5. What is this? Gamer grip? What is this? Improve your game, your grip on the game. I think these are little things that you put on your analog sticks.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, is it a spray or a lotion?
Non-slip, sticky, dry hand formula.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't know what the fuck this is. It's for so I can fondle my PS4 harder. And then he sent me these little things. These are the things that go on somewhere to soften something.
Like a rubber grommet or something?
Yeah, looks like it.
Okay, yeah, part of a controller.
Yeah.
So what games do we have here?
So Days Gone, never heard of it. Looks like a zombie game.
Good game, yeah.
Uncharted 4, this is, these are the Naughty Dog people, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same people that make Last of Us, correct?
I've always heard really good things about this. God of War, that's the next one that I wanted to play after The Last of Us.
The newest one?
Yeah, the newest one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Play it.
The Last of Us Remastered, the original game.
Remastered. Didn't know they had a remastered version.
Yeah, I think because the original one came out for PS3, right?
Correct.
And then they remastered it for PS4, which is probably what they're going to do with PS.
Correct.
I mean, Last of Us.
It's already being upscaled for PS5, yeah, it's but they be announced that they are probably going to be doing a remastered patch for the game.
Spider-Man, which is the other... there was three games that I wanted to play. Bless you.
Thank you.
It was Last of Us 2, Spider-Man, and God of War. And now I have them all in my hand. Thank you so much, dude. This could have got you... if you would have turned this into GameStop stock, you'd be a fucking millionaire.
Yeah, depends on when you bought it.
you go to GameStop, you bring those games, they're like, the best we can do is $4.95 and a lollipop. That's it.
Yeah. God, my fucking Dogecoin really fucking took a shit today. Anyway, thanks, dude. That's fucking awesome. As far as my guilt, the guiltiest part of it is talking about it on the podcast so much. But this is what I've had time to play. It's either console talk or no talk, guys. Mm-hmm. So this is what I have to hit you with right now.
Well, I think it's good every now and then to reach out and play consoles, though, even if you are a PC gamer, just to see what else is out there.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. What's everybody playing next week?
Wiconius, I got a question before I answer this. I just got to the part where I met the Scars on Last of Us 2. How far am I? I was guessing around 40 to 50% in. As far as next week, I do want to play more Return to the Savage Planet or Travel to the Savage Planet. And then that other game that I bought that I haven't played, Slash Fest or Gore Fest or something like that, the first person RP roguelike. So I want to play that. You guys?
So the only thing that I'm picking up during this summer sale, I'm sorry, lunar sale, I just call every Steam sale the summer sale. It's the original one. But the only game that I am picking up is Generation Zero, which, you know, it's kind of got some mixed reviews. Played it back in beta, wasn't really that impressed with it, but there are people on the server who play and enjoy that game. And if you got people to play with, how bad can a game be, right? So I'm going to grab that. It's on sale for like $8.50, and a quarter, usually $25. So good time to pick that up. Why not? And hopefully I will have a chance to play that this coming week.
We were stoked about that game when it was coming down the pike. We were like, oh shit, like this looks awesome. Choose your 80s character or whatever. And
it had some cool ideas.
It had some cool ideas.
It was when crafting survival was really popular, but then it was crafting survival with a point. Like you're working your way through the map and you have like objectives and things to do. So I don't know. I'm going to give it a shot and we'll see how it is. I'm not really like expecting a whole lot out of it. You know, I'm not expecting Valheim here, but
I played the beta and the robots are creepy. They did a really good job of making the robots creepy.
Oh yeah. The enemies are robots in it, not zombies, which is refreshing. I'd rather fight robots. And yeah, it takes place in the 80s, but I don't know. We'll see.
Shit, I might play this game with you. This looks really cool.
Yeah, get it while it's on sale, man. That sale ends tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I mean, tomorrow being Monday, right, 10 o'clock.
Nick, what you got?
Yeah.
What are you playing next week?
So apparently I'm only working 2 days this week, so I'll be playing The Last of Us when the baby's asleep or taking a nap or, fuck, I don't know. Really, I think I'm just going to play The Last of Us, hoping JP Diddy sends me some sort of package. As far as PC games, I'm going with the flow. If something catches my eye, like this game, like Generation Zero, I'll be playing this shit. So.
All right.
Well, Conius is asking if I'm playing as Ellie. Who else would I be playing as? I never had a choice. Is there a choice?
No, there's... no, you... the game changes and you play as another person later.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. At the beginning of the game, I did play as somebody briefly.
No, there's more later. I'm not going to spoil anything, but there's more later.
Yeah, I'm playing as Ellie, and I just met the Scars. So I was guessing 40, 50%. Anyway, you can get back to me later. Speaking for Sniper, Nick, Bobby, and myself, PlayStation tits. Bye.